Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Firebound by Kaylee King. Narrated by Amy Hall and Jamie Rennell. Chapter 1. Remington. I was a happy person. And I mean that. I'm not lying like so many others do when they slap a fake smile on their face and swear up and down their lives are great. I was truly happy. You know the old adage of the grass is always greener? My grass was the greenest. Don't you get your panties in a twist? I'm self-aware enough to realize that saying this makes me sound like a condescending bitch. Before you come for my head for boasting about my pretty grass and perfect life, I'll warn you that life has already come for me. It came for me, knocking me on my ass, and I haven't been able to get back up since. My grass isn't so green. My smile isn't as bright, and I'm no longer seeing the world through rose-colored glasses. I took a lot of things for granted before the universe decided to give me a swift reality check. One of those being the ability to dream. Before my world exploded and the jagged pieces of it rained down on me like sharp glitter, I used to look forward to going to sleep. Not because I was exhausted and my body needed the rest. No. I look forward to the places my dreams would take me. They were always so vivid, so real. I was never one of those people who forgot their dream when they woke up. I remembered each and every one of them. They were a lovely escape. Now, I dread going to sleep because I know when I close my eyes at night, I won't be met with the same kind of dreams I once had. Instead, I'm brought back to that moment that changed everything. Do you know the exact moment when your life fell apart? Can you pinpoint the moment you knew nothing would ever be the same? Can you remember who stood next to you while it happened? Do you remember their face? Their name? I remember it all. I remember every painful second as I stood there watching my world implode. I remember his face, and the way his eyes stared into mine, like he was looking into my newly broken, battered soul. I remember his name. I utter it like a curse now, instead of the prayer it once was. I remember it all, and that is why I'm working so hard to forget. Drinking away your pain isn't an easy task when you're a wolf shifter. Our fast metabolisms mean the buzz from alcohol wears off fast. After 3 months of testing different methods and delivery systems, I found the key to achieving a longer-lasting buzz. Large quantities in a short period of time. Not rocket science, and it's pretty easy, especially when you're friends with the bartender. Elsie lines up the shots in front of me, that grim look on her face firmly intact, just like it is every time I visit the club she works at, which has become more frequent as of late. I don't know how you manage to do this without needing your stomach pumped. I would be hungover until next Christmas if I drank all this. You're absolutely crazy. I'm a lot of things, but crazy isn't one of them. I scrunch my face in dislike. I believe the term you're looking for is overachiever or existential crisis. Both are fitting in this instance. Elsie laughs softly, her short blonde hair moving around her face as she shakes her head at me. She can laugh because she thinks I'm struggling to deal with the stress of midterms because she still believes I'm enrolled in classes. She has no idea the kind of things my family and I have had to face in the past year and a half. Elsie's poor human mind wouldn't be able to comprehend if I told her. I was born and raised in this world, and I hardly believe what my life has come to. A big part of me envies her. I wish I could live blissfully unaware of the dangers lurking in the shadows and the monsters that really exist out there. I wish I didn't know that sooner or later, the biggest monster of them all is going to be showing up at our doorstep, demanding our blood as payment for the monkey wrenches we've thrown into his plans. What are we drinking to tonight? Elsie asks, picking up one of the shot glasses. She's not supposed to drink on the job, but she always makes an exception for me and has one with me. I think it over for a minute, pondering the plethora of choices. Finally, I settle on, to the boys that break our hearts and ruin our dreams. My dreams take me back to the darkest moment, but they've also been infiltrated by him. He's the one person I want nothing to do with. But even in my dreams, I can't escape Jax Whitlock. The burn of the alcohol running down my throat is welcome. Sometimes pain is the perfect distraction. Just like it's difficult for a wolf shifter to actually become drunk, it's very difficult and rare for us to have a hangover. Difficult, but not impossible. What I'm experiencing right now is proof of that. The humming from the heater is almost too loud for my sensitive ears and pounding head to handle. The thin stream of late morning light coming from behind the partially open blackout curtains makes my corneas burn. If I had the energy, I'd get up and shut the damn things. But I've elected to lie here and wallow in the pain a little while longer. Last night is a little bit of a blur. After consuming the copious amounts of tequila shots Elsie graciously provided me, it gets a little fuzzy. The faint memories of loud electronic music, flashing lights, and a mix of sweaty memories are all that I can recall at this time. That's probably for the best. No one needs to remember exactly what they did when they were blacked out. Some memories are best left forgotten. There are just some things that don't need to be replayed. There is no reason to add to my embarrassing moment highlight reel. It's already extensive. My moments of greatness, as I prefer to call them, have been multiplying in the past 6 months. Every step and decision I make are solidifying my role as the family screw-up. That role used to belong to Riker, my oldest brother. But since he discovered his long-lost mate is alive, he's really gotten his shit together. What a fucking show-off. He used to get brought home in police cars after vandalizing buildings and beating the crap out of people. He even disappeared for 5 years, didn't bother calling home once. Riker would just send the occasional postcard to let us know he was still breathing. Now he's part of the Alpha Pair, leading the pack with his mate Pruitt. He's even going to be a dad in a couple of months. Hell, all three of my brothers are doing better than me now. All mated and blissfully happy with their women. It's sick, really, how insanely in love they are with their mates. They always say you'll never understand the intensity of a mating bond until it happens to you. But my brothers have completely changed since meeting their mates. Riker is less volatile. Sure, he still loses his ever-loving mind occasionally and turns into a total rage monster. But it's happening less often. Especially since Prue is carrying his child. Ranger is no longer participating in underground cage fights, and his dark, gloomy cloud has dispersed since he found Winslow. Winnie is half brave and half crazy. A fun combo that keeps Ranger on his toes. And Ransom has finally stopped hiding parts of himself since Isabeau came into his life. Together, they make a deadly pair, their bloodlust matching each other's. Meanwhile, I'm here, alone in this hotel room, and slowly watching the remaining pieces of my life rot. Or at least I thought I was alone. The footsteps that stop in front of my room tell me that my solitude is about to end. I send a silent prayer that they'll go away. But the slow, methodical knocks ruin that dream. I could ignore them, but it's not an option because I know who's out there. There is roughly 30 seconds on the clock before they break into the room. As it is, knocking was a courtesy. Groaning, my stomach heaving and head spinning, I pull myself out from under the fluffy down comforter. My neck cracks when I glance down at my clothes. The short, glittery dress I put on before going to the club clings to my body. The straps are hanging off my shoulders, and the hem has ridden up to an inappropriate length. I tug it back down because I don't need my newest sister-in-law seeing my bright pink thong. We are not that close yet. With a glance at the mirror above the desk, I find that the dark makeup I'd applied last night is smeared all over my eyes. Walking to the door on unsteady feet, my fingers wipe at ruined mascara and eyeliner. Opening the door, I lean against the door jamb, blinking rapidly at the bright lighting in the hallway. Eyes, the lightest, coldest shade of blue I've ever seen, stare blankly at me, and there's an equally unimpressed look on her face.
"This is a good look on you,"
she comments dryly.
"Trying something new with your makeup?"
My lips purse and my eyes squint at her. Deciding to play along, I tell her, "Yeah, I was going for Hot Mess Barbie meets Sexy Raccoon.
I think I nailed it. Shrugging as I attempt to wipe more of the makeup from my face, but I know it's no use.
What are you doing here, Isabeau?
Of all the people to come showing up at my hotel room, she would be last on the list. My mother or Pruitt would be at the top, but I've been ignoring both of their texts and calls. Maybe they've finally got the hint?
You've missed the past four training sessions.
Beau cocks her head, her stare unrelenting.
I'm here to collect you since you've decided to act like a stubborn child and ignore all the phone calls.
I frown at her. You didn't call me.
No, I decided a more direct approach would be better. It's harder to reject me when I'm standing in front of you.
The corner of her mouth tips up cockily.
You have 10 minutes to get ready before I drag you out of this hotel by your hair.
You wouldn't. I narrow my eyes. Isabeau is a highly trained assassin. Being discreet is her thing. Surely, she wouldn't do something that would draw that much attention to her. She takes a step forward, hand behind her back. Of course, she's dressed in head-to-toe black, a leather corset cinched tight around her waist. There are roughly 5 hidden weapons on her at all times. I've never met someone as lethal as her.
Wait, that's a lie.
There may be one other, but I don't want to ruin my day by thinking of him.
Wouldn't I? These training sessions are important, and they're mandatory for all pack members.
4 months ago, Pruitt and Riker gave Beau the beta female position of the pack. Seems the vampire is taking her new job very seriously. Steeling myself, I shake my head. I'll come to the next one. I don't feel good today. I already feel 10 times better than I did when I first woke up, but still not well enough to go spar and train with my other pack members.
Nope, that's not an option. You're coming today.
Beau is completely unmoved by my compromise.
And you only have 9 minutes now before I forcibly remove you from this building.
Beau, please, I really don't want to go. I know who's been lingering around still. Why won't he just leave? He's never stuck around this long before.
No, Remy.
Isabeau's face hardens.
You know who's coming for us. We have to be prepared. This isn't up for discussion. Now go get cleaned up. Take a fucking shower, you reek of booze and cheap cologne. We don't need any bloodshed if you show up smelling like this.
What, you think my brothers will lose it if I smell like a man? That's ridiculous. They know I've been in a relationship before. Cold eyes clash with mine.
It's not your brothers I'm worried about.
My stomach rolls again. But this time, it's not the booze.
Chapter 2. Remington.
When I'm slammed into the mat for the 3rd time in a row, and the air momentarily leaves my lungs again, I decide I'm over this bullshit. I'm this close to either snapping at Isabeau, who stands over top of me with an arrogant look on her face, or getting up and stomping away like a toddler. The only thing stopping me from doing the latter is I've already been called a stubborn child today, and I don't want to add any more fuel to that fire. I came here to train, not to have the shit beat out of me, vampire. I grit as I pull my aching body into a sitting position. My body now hurts from the absolute pounding I've gotten since I arrived back on pack property for the first time in a month. What was once my brother's backyard is now a vast training area. Various padded fighting mats sit among the forested area. Different groups practice sparring with each of them. Across the way is the firing range Ransom built Isabeau, and Winnie is sitting there with a shockingly large rifle pressed to her shoulder, firing at a target 50 yards away. I'm a wolf shifter, a pack animal by nature. I should feel at peace being surrounded by the chaos and noise of my pack. But instead, I feel antsy. Antsy because I know he could show up here at any minute. I've gone a month without seeing him. While it hasn't been a great month by any means, it's been 4 weeks since I felt the soul-crushing guilt I experience when I lock eyes with Jax.
You shouldn't have missed a month of training.
Isabeau offers me a hand to help pull me up, but I brush it away, standing on my own.
You wouldn't be so rusty if you'd been here, wolf.
Like that would do me any good fighting against you. I wave my hand lackadaisically in her direction. Beau has been trained since birth how to fight. Her first kill was at 5 years old. She had a much different upbringing than me. She can take on someone 3 times her size without much effort. Meanwhile, I feel like I've been hit by a bus. It doesn't matter how much I train. I would never be able to beat her, which is endlessly frustrating.
This is true.
She nods once.
But you're not even trying. I told you I didn't want to be here.
I yank the hairband from my shoulder-length hair. My ponytail has come loose from the ass-beating I've endured. The hair I've been trying to smooth out is abruptly messed up again, when a hand ruffles the strands. Snarling, I whirl around to find my brother standing there, a stupid grin on his face.
Look who's risen from the dead,
Ransom chuckles.
Are you finally done hiding from us?
My fingers tangle in the newly formed knots in my hair. Too frustrated to deal with it, I give up. Sneering at my brother, I snap. I wasn't hiding. I was taking some time for myself, and there is nothing wrong with that. If I recall, you went on a rogue wolf hunt for months, and no one came and dragged you home.
I was 1,000 miles away. You've been stashed away in some hotel 30 minutes away from home.
35 minutes, but who's counting?
I was also doing a job. You're running away because of what happened. I know you're grieving Gage, but Remy, this isn't...
I hold up my hand, cutting him off. Stop, I order. You want me here to train? Great, let's train. But do not bring up Gage again. The conversation of my dead boyfriend is off limits, Ransom. Grieving. I really wish it were that simple. It'd sure as hell be easier to blame my behavior on grief. Then I'd get a pass for jumping off the deep end like I have. Ransom's ocean blue eyes, the same color as mine, flick to his mate, who stands silently evaluating the exchange before he looks back at me.
Fine, but if you're here to train, you're going to put in some actual effort. No more of this half-assed bullshit I've been watching.
Blowing out a breath, I lift my chin. Fine. That's the only warning before I slam my fist right into his jaw. Bo laughs behind me, but I don't turn to look at her. My eyes never leave my brother as he stumbles back, caught off guard. Using his surprise to my advantage, I take the moment to deliver a punishing roundhouse kick to his chest. Just like Bo, Ransom is dangerously vicious. It will only be so long before he's slamming me into the mat under our feet. Blood drips down his chin from his split lip. When he smiles at me excitedly, his teeth are coated in crimson, giving him an unhinged appearance. Ransom's wolf is wild, craves the fight. My wolf doesn't seek out violence, but if the opportunity appears, she's going to rise to the occasion. She was raised by alphas, after all. Ransom's fist flies at my face, and I narrowly block it with my forearm before jumping out of the way. I'm subconsciously aware that the other pack members have stopped in their own sparring to watch ours. A Weyland family fight is bound to draw attention. Someone almost always leaves with a broken bone. His leg kicks out, swiping my legs out from under me. Landing on my ass, I roll out of the way, just before his fist comes barreling toward me. It lands on the mat, inches away from my head. I kick my leg out, and my foot connects with his knee with a satisfying crunch. His leg buckles and he falls forward. While he's down, I take the moment to spring back up. Feeling confident that I was able to make Ransom fall, I hesitate just a moment too long to observe my handiwork before throwing another punch. His hand wraps around my fist so tight, bones crack. Ransom doesn't let go of my hand as he rises back to his feet. While he moves, he slowly, methodically, bends my wrist and my arm in the direction it's not meant to bend. My bones strain. My muscles scream in pain. In an attempt to get him to loosen the hold on my limb, I bring my knee up, slamming it into his gut. He grunts, and his hand loosens just enough for me to slip from his hold. With the hand that isn't still hurting, I deliver another blow to his smug face. With a nasty growl, stemming from the wolf that lives within him, he charges me like a bull. His arms wrap around my middle, lifting me in the air. I bring my elbows down on his back repeatedly, trying to force him to drop me as he barrels us forward. We land on the mat that was yards away from the one we started at. The crowd that watches moves with us, but is mindful to not get too close. They don't want to get caught in the fray. We roll as we land on the mat. I scramble to make sure I don't end up pinned under him. That will be the end of this little display if he gets that kind of upper hand. The delight that I'm able to pin Ransom to the mat before he can do the same to me is short-lived. One second I'm feeling victorious. The next I'm being flipped over his head and landing on my back, promptly being put back in my place. For the first 20-plus years of his life, Ransom kept his wolf's strength hidden from us. We thought he was a docile, playful wolf, but that's what my brother wanted us to see. We had no idea that his wolf craved the fight, the bloodshed. His wolf is a warrior. I've just gotten to my knees when his hand is wrapping around my neck. One-handed, he lifts me from the ground. Gasping for air, I shove at his hand, but it doesn't budge. Extending my claws, I dig them into his forearm and tear at the skin. It hurts like a bitch now, but he'll be healed in the next hour or so. He drops me and crumbles down into a crouching position. Momentarily distanced by his wounds, I snake my arms around his neck, effectively getting him into a chokehold. My wolf howls in delight in my head that we are, for the moment, winning. Grinning like a person gone mad, I apply more pressure to Ransom's airways. The sound of him choking for air only encourages me. People hoot and holler around us, cheering me on. But I ignore them all. My entire focus is on my opponent. That is, until the warm heat licks up my spine, and every nerve ending in my body sizzles with awareness. A sensation that only happens when he's close. My body can sense him before I've even laid eyes on him. My head snaps up, searching him out. As if we are magnets, drawn to each other. I find him in less than a second. He walks down the small hill incline from the house, Pruitt at his side, a content smile on her face. They're always together. My best friend has grown fond of the demon wolfshifter hybrid. He also has a smidge of warlock blood in him, but is such a small amount we hardly ever address it. He listens to whatever she's babbling on about, but he's not looking at her. His violet eyes are locked on me. The corner of his mouth lifts in a smirk as he assesses the situation. Every time I see him, I feel like I've been punched in the gut. The guilt is so strong. There's physical pain. There's always a dull ache, something I've tried distracting myself from. But seeing Jax brings it rushing forward until it's a sharp, unbearable pain. How can he be smirking right now? How can he seem so unfazed? Doesn't he remember what happened? The triumph I was feeling just seconds ago fizzles out, until all I can focus on is the man I've tried so hard to forget the better part of a year. Without thinking of the consequences, my arms loosen on Ransom's neck. One second, I'm standing behind my brother. The next, he's behind me. My effort to get away is unsuccessful. Strong hands wrap around my upper arms, keeping me in place. I bring my knee up just like I did before, but he saw it coming this time. One hand catches my leg, the other tightens its grip on my arm. The look of anticipation on his face is my only warning before I'm airborne. He whirls around once, gaining momentum, before hurling me 20 feet through the air. My body spins multiple times, blurring my vision. The distant sound of gasps fill my ears. The tree in my direct path is what finally stops me. The wood cracks against the force of my body colliding with it. So do the bones in my right shoulder and ribs. Pain flares through my body when I finally return to the ground in a heap. Disoriented, I roll over to my back and blink slowly up at the tree branches above. All I can focus on is the ache in my bones. Any other concern or sensation momentarily melts away. It's a nice reprieve, but it's short-lived. I'm going to kill Ransom. As soon as I move, he's going to be roadkill. Things come back into focus, and the sound of shouting somewhere behind me has me turning my head with a groan. Back on the mat we were sparring on, Ransom and Jack stand toe-to-toe, yelling at each other. My brother's eyes have shifted into their glowing silver color, and Jax's purple ones also glow as his own beast pushes to the surface. What the hell is he so upset about? Different pack members try to pull them apart, but they're both unmoved. Jax's hands are balled into fists at his sides, but from here I can see them shake in anger. He has no right to be angry. Isabeau finally steps in and pulls her mate back while Prue talks down Jax.
What the fuck was that? You're supposed to be sparring.
Jax yells at Ransom.
How is she supposed to learn and improve if she's injured? We were sparring, and she is learning.
Ransom defends himself.
Just now she learned what happens when she gets distracted. She won't be able to let her guard down even for a second when the real fight comes. I just saved her from making that mistake when it actually counts.
I've heard enough of this. Trying to pull myself up, I suck in a lung full of air, but immediately regret it when my broken bones scream in protest. A small hand appears in front of my face, chip black polish coating the nails, following the arm up to her face. I find Winslow standing there, her weird two different colored eyes looking down at me.
I didn't know you could fly.
Ha ha, I comment dryly before taking her offered hand. You're so funny. She grins while pulling me back to my feet.
I know.
I'm thinking about taking this shit on the road, becoming a comedian or something. I stagger a bit, unsteady on my feet, but with Winslow's steadying hands, I find my balance.
You could be like a traveling circus act. Talk to your ghost friends, and after you're done helping them move on, you can tell bad jokes in dive bars.
Winslow's gift, and sometimes curse, is being able to see and communicate with the dead. She's basically a walking Ouija board. She loops her arms around my waist and begins to lead me toward the house, leaving the yelling men behind us.
That actually doesn't sound so bad. Sounds a lot better than preparing to go to war.
The laugh that bubbles out of me sounds sad even to my ears. How did my life come to this? For almost 2 years, my family has been fighting small battles against forces we never thought we'd face, and now the final war is coming. I should be preparing for midterms right now, not preparing for battle. With a grim feeling filling my aching chest, I sweep my eyes over the sight in front of me and accidentally lock eyes with a set I try to avoid. My face turns to stone, my guard locking firmly in place, before turning away from him. Yeah, anything sounds better than that.
Chapter 3. Jax. The cell feels bigger when she's gone, and it also feels so cold. Nothing about the 12x12 room is warm or welcoming. The walls are bare of any pictures. Just a shiny coat of white paint covers them. The floors are just as sterile-looking, made of pristine white tiles. She's the reason this room ever has any warmth. She's the reason this room feels safe, even when I know it's not. Bad things happen here. Bad things are happening to her right now, and I can't do anything about it. They keep saying that I'll figure out how to control it, that I'll learn to use the power coursing through my veins. But it hasn't happened yet. I wish it would, so I could use it on them. That way, I could save my mom from the bad things they do to her. Mom always tells me to be strong, to be brave. But I don't like when I'm alone in here. I'm afraid they'll come for me next, that he'll come for me. He always tells me that I'm special, that he has big plans for me. But I don't know what yet. I try to be brave, but he scares me. Sometimes when I dream, I see his face. Something about his eyes and the way he looks at me makes my skin get goosebumps. The look is always so much more frightening in the dreams, because when he smiles, he has fangs, and they're coated in blood. I think it's my blood. I always wake up before I can find out. I hate those dreams. The yellow ball bounces against the far wall before coming back to where I sit on the cold ground. I catch it and throw it again. I don't have many toys, but Mom says when we get out of here, she'll get me as many as I want. She says that a lot, that we'll get out of here. But I'm not sure I believe her. I want to believe her. I want to believe one day Mom will take me to see the ocean like she always says she will. I want to meet the grandparents she always tells me stories about. I want to know if I look like my grandpa as much as she says I do. She tells me every night how thankful she is that I look like my grandpa, and not my dad. I'm thankful, too. I don't want to look like the man who scares us both, the man who gives me nightmares. Noticing Mom's bed across the room isn't made, I drop the ball and pull myself off the floor. Mom hates unmade beds. But they came for her so early this morning that she didn't have time to make it. They pulled her away before she could tell me goodbye. She always tells me goodbye.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?